to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. What's left of it, at least? Text line, we've still got a bunch to get to here. We'll try to get to those before the conclusion of the program. 251-343-0106. Joining us now on the line, she's a Republican nominee for Attorney General in Alabama. We could say that, but joining us since winning the primary runoff is Catherine Robertson. Catherine, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. I'm well. Glad to be with you.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Well, talk a little bit about the win and kind of the transition of going from what would say contentious primary and runoff to what we have now in this case with a general election. Still got to do the blocking and tackling, I assume.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I can say it feels way better to be on this side of it since the last time I've talked to you. So highly recommend winning. Feels good. I think there's a little bit of a lull, at least I feel it right now. You've got these special congressional elections in August, and I feel like folks are probably going to have a hard time focusing on that, much less, you know, thinking ahead to November. So I'm trying to use this time to really catch up on my day job at the office. And then obviously the great thing about my position is that I'm already in the office. And so General Marshall and I have already been spending an enormous amount of time looking ahead. Not that I'm taking anything for granted in November, but can't waste this time, being able to talk with him about the future of the office.
Well, looking ahead past January when you're sworn in, I mean, there's still some things that will be outstanding, and, you know, you'll have a new legislature and a new governor. But, right. a lot of the work, it just is kind of a continuous process. What should we expect, you think, coming around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, one of my priorities is going to be, and really already is, we've got to recruit the next generation of talent in our AG's office. I think one thing is for sure, the pressure on the state AGs, you said block and tackle, I'll use that term as well. You know, there's just a lot more expected of our office, both in the criminal justice space and then kind of on this national front. And so I'm not going to be able to deliver if I don't have, you know, plenty of people on the bench in the AG's office. And so that includes getting younger folks in, as I think our office is probably looking at some, you know, retirements in the future. So I've got to staff up first and foremost. And then, there are some projects that I've talked about on the campaign trail that I absolutely want to get done before President Trump wraps up. One of those that we've discussed before is these desegregation orders that are impacting our school systems. I think there's a whole lot of threads to pull from this redistricting decision, and we're going to have to get to work really quickly.
Yeah, so, and for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with that, but there's still places where you have it's a pre-clearance just to change. For example, if a city wants to break off and create a new school system, or if they want to, the way they district, or I don't know if it's district, the way they move students around within a system, it's all got to be done through the lens of what the federal government okays and green lights. And that comes with a perhaps unnecessary expense and a lot of hardship sometimes with the way that the federal government sets these mandates.
Yeah, it's all very race conscious or race focused. And I think that, you know, antiquated court orders and antiquated views of our state are starting to go really out of style with the federal judiciary, at least the United States Supreme Court, because their logic in the redistricting decision would seem to apply the exact same way with these court orders from the 70s that treat Alabama school systems as if their number one goal is to, you know, keep students segregated, which is ridiculous. And so it's a burden on the localities. They have to pay for private attorneys. We technically do not represent them, but we can. And given our good relationship with the Justice Department, I think is something that, you know, I just really want to see progress, if not total resolution of, before President Trump ends his term.
Because this would be something, I guess you would challenge it in court and then it would kind of play out that way.
Yeah, there's kind of two different types of these cases. One where DOJ is actually the plaintiff and is on the other side from us. And then there are times where there's a private plaintiff, or was decades ago, and DOJ sort of came in on the side of the private plaintiff. And so we've been having some great conversations about what the strategy would be to move forward and to do it efficiently. You know, the great thing about the AG's office is our attorneys are salaried. They are not paid by the hour. And so we can be pretty efficient and effective when we do things in-house. And so we're already sort of, you know, having some conversations and laying some groundwork to see some progress on that front.
Well, you mentioned the redistricting case, and Louisiana had its case, but you still got to go through the motions, I assume, with as it pertains to Alabama, that right now we're kind of operating under, you know, there's still a pending lawsuit. And, you know, while things are looking, I think, more optimistic, if you will, going forward, there's still that outstanding matter.
Yeah, we're, you know, we're, I think we've actually got a filing due later this month back at the United States Supreme Court. We're hoping to get it all resolved without having to go through a trial, but you never know. We feel good about the outcome one way or the other, and, you know, we're here for it, whichever path we have to go down. But we feel really good about that, and, you know, I feel really good about encouraging the legislature to go a little further when they have the opportunity.
Talk about this. Governor Tubber, or Governor-elect Tubber, we'll call him that, but the incoming governor, as far as I'm concerned, really with some strong comments the other day when he's speaking to the Sheriff's Association, and some of it pertains directly to criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And, right now, not to say that there's just a bad job or, you know, there's a woke criteria or anything like that going on, but it does sound like, you know, there is going to be a change in policy and really trying to, I guess, enhance public safety as much as they can. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, it does sound like it's going to be, at least the idea from the governor is going to be to pursue these flaws in the criminal justice system a little more aggressively. And I would assume a lot of that would fall under the AG's purview.
Yeah, I tried to read his comments to make sure I was tracking with everything that he was saying to the sheriffs. I think a lot of his comments were certainly about the Department of Corrections, which I'm sure he knows is going to be one of the biggest challenges that he inherits. It was one of the biggest challenges that Kay Ivey inherited and probably the five governors before her. Unfortunately, not enough was done over the terms of those previous governors so that she inherited a very special mess, and he will continue to have to deal with that. He talked a lot about prison construction, which really does not involve the AG's office. We obviously defend our prisons in litigation, and obviously that's been a big burden on our office for a while now. One way or the other, we're going to get these big cases resolved, but whether we will continue to have these kind of big cases in the future is going to depend on the prison commissioner, his or her ability to hire, and probably the success or lack thereof of our prison projects or prison construction projects. So safe prisons are a key part of the criminal justice system, because if you don't have them and you're having to fight in court over the rights of the inmates, that's money that's taken away from other areas of the justice system. So he and I are certainly aligned and wanting to get that problem fixed, and I want to be a good partner for him.
Do you think we're kind of out of the woods here? I mean, this all went down during the first Trump term. And the, you know, the Eighth Amendment violation allegations and the possible, I mean, there's a lot of discussion at the time about a possible receivership or the federal government coming in, taking over. And the AG's office had, you know, had to play a role in that. Is that danger still out there, or where do you think that is right now?
Well, our largest case, which is against the Justice Department, ironically, is it's coming to an end one way or the other here, probably in the next 6 months. I don't think we're in danger of the federal government taking over our prisons or receivership. They have not expressed an interest or really the ability to do that. But there's a lot left to negotiate. You know, we continue to be in settlement talks, but we also have a trial date schedule, and we'll see where that ends up. It's going to be tough either way, because there is, you know, there's a lot to argue about, and any kinds of improvement in our prisons costs a lot of money. And so there's just always that dynamic. But our goal is to get that behind us and start a new chapter under a new governor and hopefully not face anything like this in the future.
The more to ground level, let's talk about this, and we've seen this throughout General Marshall's term, you know, having to step in some places that are problem areas when it comes to public safety. I think Birmingham and Montgomery come first to mind, but there's also, the sort of lawlessness in some municipalities in Pritchard or Bessemer or Selma or places like that, they have a hard time even just staffing a police department and making sure the streets are safe. So what's happened, I guess, is the office you're in now, they had to step in and do some things, to really enhance what's on the ground already. And that seems like that's still going to be a problem, because you're still going to have the same leadership and perhaps even the same sort of anti-police or anti-law enforcement funding that you know, want to move money around and spend it on other things. That seems like that's still going to be a problem for you in the future.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are just some cities that don't want the help. They just don't. And you see a city that, you know, ask for assistance and you link arms and you work together to solve a problem, that works. Offering help that is not accepted, big surprise, doesn't work. I always fall back to this. We are always here to help. We want to be part of any city's solution we do. But these people are elected. And my first message is always not, oh, let the state come and save you. It's engage in your elections, because a mayor or a city council election is probably going to be the biggest impact on your public safety of any vote that you cast. And so I never want to let those guys or girls off the hook and say, oh, just, you know, call the state, we'll rush in. We certainly will. We're not going to forfeit any of our cities, but if we don't have partners locally on the ground, it won't be successful. And so, you know, my message is always, if you're complaining about your judges, complaining about your mayor, complaining about your county commission, you have the power to do something about that. And if you don't, then the results are not going to improve.
Talk about this. We talked about this during the campaign, and this has always like stuck out to me. In some places where you have elected district attorneys, they don't necessarily prosecute some of the crime. I think some people are, especially on the election integrity front, but gambling's another one. And, you know, with that, it's just like, does the AG's office really want to wade into a locality and go and prosecute a bunch of misdemeanors? Is that the best use of resources? But like really having to fill that void where you just have an elected DA, for whatever reason, chooses not to pursue what are perceived to be some alleged crimes, and they just let it go. And then that falls on AG's office. And I think we've done some stuff in the legislature to make that give it a little more teeth. But is that something that's still kind of on your radar?
Yeah, definitely. And it's not always simple. I mean, you know, it depends on the issue. It depends on the area of the state. So, for instance, the legislature can help you out. We've talked about gambling. You know, there are certain crimes where if the punishment were a little stronger, then the locals would feel, I think, more inclined to pursue these things. You understand that. That's how police departments and sheriff's offices work. It's how DA's offices work. You have to prioritize. And so if it's a misdemeanor or something that's just never going to result in any jail time and really not change anything, you can see how those cases get pushed to the back. I also will freely acknowledge that there are DA's offices around our state that are significantly under-resourced, whether that's funding or people. And that's a real problem. And I think it's a problem that they've already talked to Coach Tuberville about on the funding side. But all that to say, I'm not going to tolerate, if I'm the next attorney general, a jurisdiction just not prosecuting crimes because they don't want to or they don't feel like it. I want to assist any way that I can. I want to help them get the resources they need, but we're not going to have a single circuit in Alabama where cases just aren't being prosecuted. And it just cannot be tolerated, because once you go down that road, it's a very slippery slope, and you lose those areas in a lot of ways when it comes to public safety.
Last question we'll get you out of here on this, and this comes up all the time. Whenever I'm in like a format or setting where they're talking about this at this local level, be it, you know, especially judges who are trying to do the right thing and they're trying to put bad people away. And it's the same with the DA, the ones who are operating in good faith, but the system operates in a way that kind of works against that good faith. because the system wants fewer inmates for whatever reason. Maybe it's overcrowding, or maybe it's, you know, just a different disposition on what you do as far as punishment goes. But that seems to be like a real problem, and getting that kind of handled. What do you do there?
You know, I think we have corrected that problem in a lot of ways. So if you ask me to sort of rank what I'm most concerned about in the justice system, it is not judges that want to put people away for longer and somehow feel themselves, you know, prohibited from doing so. I really don't think that is the case. I think it was at one time. I think it was 10 years ago, maybe even 8 years ago, but so many changes have been made to sentencing and parole that I do not see that as our biggest challenge anymore. Does that mean that there isn't a judge somewhere in some county that's lenient? There are plenty here lenient that is, you know, going too hard and is prohibited from doing so. I just don't see that as the norm. I think where you see hot spots of crime, you see often too lenient judges. And so if anything, I think it's the reverse of that. And that again comes down to elections. Our judges are elected. You know, if people are seeing a revolving door, like we sometimes see in Jefferson County and Montgomery, if the judges are playing a role in that, somebody needs to run against them. And I know that's easier said than done, but the citizens really do hold the power when your judges are elected.
Catherine, we appreciate your time. I know you're very, very busy, but we appreciate you hopping on for a few minutes this morning. Let's do it again soon.
All right, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Catherine Robertson, ladies and gentlemen, Republican nominee for AG. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.